Let's take a trip down memory lane with Niagara County's Great History Show. Now, here's your host, Norm Palmer.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the show today. Today is Wednesday, August the 11th, and in the studio with me is Melissa Dunlap, the Executive Director of the Niagara County History Center, and we have a glare on my window right where you are. So there she is. I see her now. And you are solo today, but we have a very special guest coming up. But before we do that, let's tell the folks what's going on at the History Center.
Okay. So at the History Center, we do have a children's program on August 18th. It's for children 7 to 12. It's about the Titanic, and they're actually going to be assigned a real person's name, and they will vary from class. We're going to discuss the different classes on the boat. Titanic, whoops, are we still there? Yep. Norm, are you there?
We're here.
Okay. So all different things on the Titanic, and then at the end of the program, unfortunately, they find the fate of their passenger. But it is a really well-liked program. We've done it before. It's done all over the world at Titanic museums, and it is always a source of fascination. I don't know why, but it is. I guess because they said it was unsinkable, and turns out it wasn't. And it was a very sad tragedy. So that's on the 18th, and if you're interested, you can call the museum at 434-7433. It's $20 for the program, or $15 if you have a coupon from the town of Lockport. All right, so the second one is the Oktoberfest, and that's October 16th. And we have the Frankfurters are coming to play. They're a wonderful German band. Their tagline is the best of the worst. but they're fun. I mean,
that's in sausage, right?
That's in sausage, yes. Yeah. But they have the alpine horns and everything. We have a wonderful silent basket raffle. We have delicious food by Don Ike. It's held at the Cornell Cooperative in the 4-H Training Center. And it's just a fun evening. So if you're interested in tickets for that, that is 434-7433. We also have a Cemetery Tales at the Cold Spring Cemetery, and that is on Sunday, August 22nd at 1 o'clock. That's a pre-sale. We're trying to limit the crowds because people have to stand close together. And the actors will actually have microphones, so you won't be close to them. And at this point, I think we're asking people again to wear masks. But it's a really interesting program. We'll have five different residents of Cold Springs. It'll tell you their life. So you walk around and do that. It's $10. You could call the museum at 434-7433 for reservations for that. Or you can contact us at info@niagarahistory.org, O-R-G. So those are the three programs we have, and then we're hoping that this year we'll be able to have our Christmas program.
We hope.
Yeah. We're optimistic, let's
yes.
say that. Okay. So before we have our guest, we're going to talk a little bit. He is going to talk about the radio station, and I just wanted to just give you a really brief history that the first radio broadcasting station, Lockport, was born in October 19th, 1922. And it was WMAK, one of the few radio stations in the country that was built on Mill Street by Norton Laboratories engineer Lounsbury. It operated 360 meters and was only on the air a few hours a week, but the powerful signal could be heard hundreds of miles away. Eventually, the studios were moved from Mill Street location to the second floor of the former Rialto Theater, which was on the southeast corner of Main and Pine Streets. From there, the studios ended up at Buffalo's Hotel Lafayette downtown, and in 1927, the towers and transmitter were moved to the Shawnee Road in the town of Wheatfield. Later studio locations included both the Ram Building and the Liberty Bank Building in Buffalo. Then in the early 1930s, the Federal Communications Commission awarded the frequency to the Buffalo Evening News, and WBEN went on the air, and WMAK ceased to exist. In 1940, the Corso family of Lockport, owners of the Union Sun and Journal newspaper, sent a letter to the FCC requesting an FM frequency for Lockport. The okay was given the summer of 1946, and even with the aftermath of World War II and the shortage of manpower and materials, construction began at 320 Michigan Street Studios. That's where we are today. And it was ready to go in October of 1948, and a sign-on and full programming began on the Halloween of that year. WUSJ, call letters obviously standing for the Union Sun and Journal, operated at 99.3 on the FM band, but there were very few receivers to listen to the broadcast, so the Corsons applied for an AM license, and the WUSJ AM went on the air in May of 1949. The station was owned and operated by the Lockport newspaper until 1970, and the FCC forced newspapers to sell other media outlets and they may own in the same markets. So that's kind of a back history of how the radio got to be here.
And everybody knows the radio's here now, and we have the History Show every second Wednesday of the month, and this is it. So let's get to our guest, very special guest, one of the DJs that was in the area, started his career at WUSJ, Mr. Ken Johnson. Good morning, Ken, if you're still on the air. We are ready to roll with Melissa Dunlap, the Executive Director of the History Center.
Well, good morning, Norm, and good morning, Melissa. Hope everybody's doing okay this morning.
Yes, thank you.
Melissa just went through the background of the radio station from its inception in the 20s, and it looks the same probably as it did in the 20s, maybe a paint job here and there. But Melissa's ready to go. I'm going to turn it over to her. Ken, you and her have a good time.
All right. Sounds good, Norm.
Okay. So, Ken, tell us a little bit about your career, and then we'll talk about Lockport.
All right. Sounds good. I was lucky enough to start out at WUSJ, which is what WLVL's call letters were, as you said, back in the day. And I got in through an interesting scenario. They actually had an explorer scout troop that was based at the radio station back then. And there was a wonderful guy by the name of Dave Peters. That wasn't his real name. That was his radio name. And Dave used to host a very popular show called Speak Up. It was a daily talk show from, I think, 11 to 12 noon or thereabouts every day. And he also did a DJ show and some other things at the station. But anyway, he was the coordinator for this explorer post with the scouts. So what they did was they brought us in and they kind of taught us the fundamentals of radio and allowed us to work in the production room and make a little sample radio show. And then they had an hour on Saturday that they devoted to allowing the kids to come on the air and do a disc jockey show. So one by one we had a chance to do it. And my turn came up, and thankfully, I did a fairly good job, and based on that, Dave worked with me a little more, and eventually I got a job doing part-time fill-in work at the station, and that eventually worked into me doing the Sunday morning show back when they, we didn't sign, the station was not on 24 hours a day back then. During the week, I think it would sign on around 5 or 5:30 in the morning, and we signed off the air at midnight, so the station was not on the air 24/7. So I did a Sunday morning show. We didn't sign on until 8 o'clock in the morning. And the entire morning was taken up with church services. We had a remote service from St. Patrick's Church, which is now All Saints in Lockport. They had a couple of, I can't remember all the churches they had, but there were about three or four different shows. Some were on tape and some were live. And then after that, I got to do a radio DJ show in the afternoon for a few hours. So that's kind of how I got my toehold in the business. And then from there, I've always been a big country music fan. I loved country music. And I'll tell you a little story about WUSJ. When I was a little kid, my dad was a big country fan, and they used to have a program on Saturday evening, so it was a live show, and they had a local band. They were Jerry and George and the Niagara Playboys, and they used to play, I think, at a lot of night spots around the Niagara County area and They were pretty popular. And they had a one-hour radio show on Saturday evening. And in the big studio, when you first come in the radio station, that big studio to the right, they used as a performance studio. And they had a piano in there, and the guys would come in and set up their instruments. And they had a little bit of a studio audience. So we would come in, and they'd set up some folding chairs for us, and we'd watch these guys on the air for about an hour. And, boy, they did a great, great job playing, you know, the country tunes of the day. And then right after that, talk about a segue, they would go to J.R. Reed, who was, a very popular DJ and very well-known in the Lockport area. He had his show, Reed Rocks, on Saturday night. So they would go to live country music to Reed Rocks, playing all the top 40 hits on the radio there. But anyway, from there, from Lockport, I went to work at WWOL, which was a country station up in Buffalo. I worked there for quite a few years. And then eventually I wound up at WYRK, which at the time I went there had only been a country station for about a year, and I stayed with them until the late 90s. Eventually I went to work for XM Satellite Radio for a few years up until the merger they had with Sirius Radio, and then I was out, as were several hundred other people. As you know, mergers in any business, especially radio, really doesn't do much good for most of the employees.
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm retired. I live in the Maryland area, and I look back fondly on my radio career, and especially my early days up in Lockport at WUSJ.
Well, that's good. Now, did you work, because I don't have the timeline in my mind, or Norm, did either of you work with Tom Joles when he was here?
No, Tom actually was before my time there. He would have been 50s, 60s, I'm guessing.
Well, maybe Norm knows. Norm?
Yes, that's the time frame I was going to mention to Ken, that one of my friends that I went to school with, and Cliff Smith, started out, and now Ken, we can add Ken's name to the list of morning men DJs that worked here at WUSJ at the time in the 50s and the 60s, and then went on to bigger and better things. And as you heard, Ken ended up being a program director. So we had quite a few young people start out in that era in the 50s and 60s, and one came back. His name is Hank Nevins.
Ah,
Hank started out here, He went on to different things and program directors and whatever else. Now he's back as our newsman, and I think that puts a nice touch to the situation. So I was going to ask Ken that, did you get to meet Cliff Smith, or Cliff was in the 60s, and he started the sports program that I took over now. I took over in 95 from him, and I started out in 82 in the business, so I have 39. Between Ken and I think we are pretty close to almost a century mark.
I met Cliff a time or two, but I'll tell you, interestingly enough, I was more acquainted with Clip's wife, Nancy, because I used to deliver newspapers. I lived in South Lockport on Dorchester Road, and Clip and his wife lived over on Woodbury Drive, which was one street over, and I delivered their newspapers. So I knew them through that, and then I worked at the Union Sun and Journal paper. I started out as a paper boy when I was a kid, and then I worked in the circulation department in college. And Nancy worked, I believe, it was the advertising department, and I knew her from there as well. So I did know his wife obviously much better than I really knew Clip.
Yeah, that's funny. He was so much with the puns.
Oh, I was going to tell that when I hosted my cable television show. I had a weekly show for an hour, the sports magazine show. So I had Clip on. And him and I were going back and forth, and of course, you can't couldn't at the time talk to Cliff Smith without getting a pun. So when he got done with the show, he looked at me, says, "Yeah," he said, "I can say one thing, folks. He is above the norm." So you had to be on your toes all the time. And I said, "What a contrast we are."
Clip, I'll tell you a story. You may have heard this about Clip, because obviously at the time I came to work at the radio station. He had been there somewhat recently. He had just moved on to television. And I was talking with, I think it was Ron Raitz and a few of the other guys there, and they mentioned that Clip, he was pretty much the go-to guy for all the play-by-play sports that were on the radio station at the time. You do the basketball game and football game. And they talked about how he had this phenomenal photographic memory and that he would sit down and look at the team rosters, you know, ahead of starting the play-by-play, all the guys' names and numbers. And then he would do the entire game without having to check the sheet once. He memorized every team player. It was just, they said it was just phenomenal to watch him do the play-by-play.
And it's quite ironic that you mentioned that, because of the gentleman that I followed that picked up the job after he moved on to bigger and better things had that same photographic memory. And I
sports play-by-play is something that, you know, definitely never been my forte. And I had the greatest respect for people that can do it well. And like you say, the people that can memorize, you know, the team rosters, the guys' names, their numbers, and also some of the statistics that they've had and some of their history. I mean, it's just an amazing talent to have.
Yeah, I'm a motor mouse, so that helped a lot when I got into the business. And the first time I worked with Tom, I says, oh my, he looked at the roster once, put it down, never looked at it again.
Oh,
and
boy.
I said, oh my goodness. I said,
yeah,
you
that's
know.
That's an amazing, just an amazing talent to have.
My story about Clip Smith is that my son took lessons at Swicker's swimming pool. Remember that?
Yes.
And he never got out of the locker room. And so it would be maybe a half hour after he got out of the pool, and he'd still be in the locker room. And that was always when Clip Smith went in to swim. And every week I'd say to Clip, would you go and see what Scott's doing? And I could hear him yell in his booming voice, your mother, watch out.
Oh, boy.
Well,
I'll tell you something else about Clip. Back in this is going back to 1965, the Lockport Plaza had a promotion with the radio station that if you would go to one of the participating plaza stores and fill out a little application, you could get a call from Santa Claus. And they had a daily program during the holiday season on WUSJ with Santa Claus. And Santa Claus was actually Clip Smith.
Oh.
And
he must have been an official helper.
Had her name drawn, and they called, and so Clip called, and my uncle happened to be at the house that day, and my dad had a reel-to-reel tape recorder. And he set it up, and I actually have a tape recording of the entire Santa Claus show from December 1965 with Clip Smith as Santa Claus, and the announcer who announced the show was the late Tony Allen, whose real name was Tony DePasquale. I went to school with his son. We graduated from high school together, and it's a hoot to hear Clip, because he kind of does his voice like this, it's Santa Claus kind of thing, but he does it so well. And it's just a hoot to hear, you know, Clip Smith being Santa Claus.
Yeah. He must have been one of Santa's helpers that year.
Yeah, they actually had another guy. I don't know who did this other voice, but there was a character called Elphys, and he talked with this real high-pitched voice, and I'm not sure who the announcer was that did it, but you could tell that they were just having the best time with the Santa Claus bit.
Okay, one thing is that I like to talk about when we talk about Clip Smith is the physical size difference between him and I. Clip was a monster of a guy. He was about 6'4", went at about 300 pounds. I'm 5'7", 150. So whenever we talk about Clip Smith and Norm Palmer in the same breath, I said, well, the only thing we had in common was our mouth. I said, everything else. And he played the tuba, Ken.
Yes,
when he
that.
Went on Channel 7, they made him play the tuba at the end of the sportscast.
Yeah, he was truly a unique personality that I think in the history of Buffalo media, there was never anyone like him before and never anyone like him after. He really had a very unique niche in Buffalo broadcast history.
Well, Tom Joles, too. I mean, he had all his morning shows, the children's shows, and you know, the weather.
And Dust Mop,
yeah.
Yeah, Tom was a very nice man. I had a chance to meet him a few times when I was at WYRK. It turned out he was a country music fan and a fan of the station. And when we'd be out at the Erie County Fair, I would run into him from time to time, and we'd chat for a little bit. And he has to be, if there is a nicer man on the planet, I have not met him yet. But Tom Joles is just a gem of a guy.
And speaking of your country music, the country music family that's still going was probably at its heyday when you were on the radio. And right now it slips my mind the name of them, but unfortunately, but they've been into the country music locally forever. It's like the great-grandchildren are
yeah,
heading
I know,
the show
I know
now.
Who you're talking about, and I can't think of the name either.
Come on, Ramblin' Lou?
Yeah, Ramblin'
yes,
Lou.
Yes.
Still
yeah,
going.
Yeah,
Ramblin' Lou Shriver.
Yes.
Yep. So, okay, well, now do you want to talk a little bit about your remembrances of Lockport?
I would love to do that, but I will tell you, I'm having a little trouble hearing you guys. Your level has, for some reason, dropped very low.
Okay.
Okay, I'll jack our microphones up a little bit. I do not have any idea what
there
the...
we go. I can hear you better now.
Okay.
Okay, very good.
For some reason, it just had slipped into broadcast Ethernet somewhere.
I call it the gremlins. It's the gremlins we have here at WLVO.
Well, you're not alone there, let me tell you. I don't think I've ever worked for a radio station anywhere that didn't have them.
Well, see, we can have them more than ever now because our general manager owner loves to say we stream worldwide now. And in that stream, we discovered there's gremlins all over the world.
And let me mention something else, too. I think that your owner, Dick Green, deserves a lot of credit because radio today has become very corporately owned. I mean, years back in Buffalo, virtually every station had a different owner, some bigger company, some smaller company, some were, you know, individuals that owned it. But, you know, Dick took on ownership of the radio station, and he has continued to run it as a local entity. It's very difficult to do today. I know that trying to be profitable and pay the bills, keep the lights on, is not an easy feat to do. But Dick has been able to do that for all these years and keep WLVL very viable, active, and able to have shows like this where people can talk about the community and the local area. And, you know, because, I mean, there's a lot of stations around the country, you know, some people don't realize this, that essentially there's nobody there. You know, they're run off a satellite or some other automated system, and there's virtually no human beings inside the radio station 24/7. But, you know, Dick is a guy that, you know, embraces the local community. He's done a great job with the station, so I think that, you know, he deserves a great tip of the hat from everybody in the Western New York and Niagara County community for keeping a radio station on the air and involved in the community.
He did get that tip of the hat, by the way. He went into the Radio Broadcasting Hall of Fame for Buffalo.
Oh, good for him.
Yes, last year or the year before, I forget which year, but he did go into that. So for his ownership and for his contributions on what he has done, as you just mentioned.
Well, deservedly so.
Okay, so you're going to talk a little bit about Lockport memories.
Oh, yeah, sure. I should also mention that the reason how I came to be on the show with you guys was John Mazur, who does your morning show. John and I worked together at both WWOL and then later on at WYRK. John worked with me at both stations, so that was our connection. And I had actually contacted him about a month or so ago when I saw he was on the air in Lockport. I didn't realize he was there. And through our discussions, we talked about the city and the radio station and so forth, and that's kind of how I got here. So thanks to John for making the connection. But, you know, I was reminiscing about Lockport, and one of the things that always strikes me is in the summertime, all the great stuff that there was for a kid to do. I mean, my memories go back to the late 50s, early 60s, and, you know, as a kid, it was just a wonderful place to grow up. I remember going to Willow Park when I was a kid. I believe it's now Altro Park over on Willow Street. They had a playground over there. They had a wading pool Of course, in the wintertime, they had a skating rink when they would fill up the area with water and we'd use it for ice skating. We'd go down to Olcott Beach. I remember going down to Olcott in the summertime, going on all the rides down there. Mm-hmm. And all the different firemen's picnics they had in the area, too, that usually would have carnival rides and games and stuff like that. But Hayes Park was something, sad to say it's not there anymore, and I just wondered maybe we've got some listeners that may remember going out there with their kids. And it was a little amusement park located not too far from the radio station.
Right, on Michigan.
I don't know what the name of that little cross street was, but it was between Trowbridge and Michigan.
Yep.
Do you remember is that street still there, Norm?
It's still there, but I can't tell you the name because it's a very short street in between the two. So.
And I do remember the restaurant. It was called the Windmill?
Yes.
Before that, I think it was just
Hayes Park.
Hayes,
yeah. Anne Marie wrote an article about it.
But I think it started out as being like the snack bar for the little amusement park, mm-hmm. Where they would just sell, you know, hot dogs and burgers and so forth. And then I think it kind of evolved into a full-time restaurant. But boy, when I was a kid, that was the place to go. We had more fun there. They had a little merry-go-round, and they had a little train that kind of went through part of the park that you'd sit on and ride around. A Ferris wheel there. So it was a pretty cool deal.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a call coming in. Would you like to take the call, Ken?
Oh, absolutely. Let's go.
Good morning. You're on Niagara County's Great History Show with Ken Johnson. Go ahead.
Hi, that park was called Hayes Park, Hayes.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you remember going there?
Oh, yeah.
Did you go on the rides? And?
Oh, definitely. Yep.
Well, that's
good.
It
was a lot of fun.
Oh, good.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
Bye.
It. And the gentleman that started that, Ken, was Mr. Hayes, that was the television repairman.
Right.
And in those
TV,
days,
his building, I think his business was right across the street from the restaurant in the park.
Right. And when I was a kid growing up, if your TV went out, you called Jim Hayes, and Jim would run over and fix your TV for you. And then when he started that park, that was phenomenal.
Yeah, I would, you know, it seemed to be a really popular thing, and I guess, I mean, I don't know the reason why it eventually closed up, but I guess all good things kind of come to an end. But that was I'll tell you another cool place I remember that some folks may also remember going to. Out at the Lockport Plaza, where the Value Store building now sits, or I don't think it's, is it still Value there?
No, I can't even tell you. It's got Mark's Pizza and a dollar store. And
yeah, it's that brick building at the far end of of the plaza. But anyway, in that area, they used to have a miniature golf course and a trampoline center set up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was, they had loudspeakers all the way through there, and usually they would have on KB radio or one of the top 40 stations, because mostly kids would go there. And we'd go there and we'd jump on the thing was called the Trampoline Center, that part of the facility. And we'd go out there in the summertime, and boy, we would have the best time jumping on the trampolines, or they'd have the little miniature golf thing next door, I think. But boy, that was a lot of fun.
And when you mentioned Willow Park and Park, of course, that's right in my heart area, because I was raised at Dudley Square.
Oh, okay.
Another park in the east end of town. And in the summertime, all the jocks that played at the high school would come out and play park softball. Clip Smith's dad, Coach Smith, ran a program that was phenomenal. He would take the jocks that were home from college, hire them for the summer, and they would coach the softball. And we had just a great time. And that would bring a tear to your tear to your eye if you came back and went around, because Dudley Square is gone. A lot of the parks are gone. They took a lot of the backstops down. And that is the one thing I think the kids need really bad back in the area, is the parks that you and I loved so much when we were kids.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. I feel bad for a lot of the kids today, because so many of them are so occupied with the video games and doing stuff in the computer in the house. And Norm, you're probably like me. I mean, when I was a kid, in the summertime, if the sun was up, I was outside.
In the park.
Yeah,
I was in the park because...
Somewhere, but I was outside. If the sun was up, we're outside playing.
Right field was my front yard. I lived right on the corner, and it was just phenomenal to do that. And when you said paperboy, I said, I think we all must have been a paperboy at one time. That's how I started out. That was my first job I had, was paperboy.
Yeah, me too. I started at the Union Sun and Journal, and I actually started when they had the paper was still on Main Street near Elm. The whole building and the presses and everything was there. It was that real old building, wood floors. I remember it was kind of creaky. And then while I was a paper boy, I think I started as a paper boy in summer of 66, and then the following spring they had built the brand new building out on Summit and Transit Streets.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, at the time, beautiful state of the art, and it's kind of sad that all these years later that building is now gone. And I remember when it was brand new and they had the grand opening, and then I worked in there in college in the circulation department for a few years.
Yeah. So, I mean, the parks, life is just very different now. Also, my kids, I couldn't keep them inside in the summer, and now my grandchildren, we have to push out the door.
Yeah, it's a whole different...
It is a whole different thing, but we did the same thing growing up. I grew up in Kenmore, but it was the same thing. We were outside all day.
And one thing that I'm going to tell you about Melissa, that her push and effort for the canal area, the locks mm-hmm. area, when you come back, you have to take a look now because they are just installing the third set, I believe, of lock tenders. There's a lady that...
It's Susan Geisler from Lewiston is the sculptor, but they've just... there's already eight, and then phase three will be the rest of them. But they have the statues from the clench photo of the lock tenders sitting on the stairs in 1897.
Nice.
And they are lifelike, they're life-size, and they are spectacular. Plus, we've, you know, redone three of the locks of the Flight of Five. So now, and there's also the Erie Traveler boat that goes through the locks. These are the original Flight of Five, the half that's still existing. And there's lock tenders that come and they open and close the lock so the people can see demonstrations. And
there's so much going on.
Yeah, it's on Saturdays. There's the farmers market, and then there's the locks demonstrations, and there's tours you can do. It is really, really nice.
You know, it's funny that I was born in Lockport and lived there for the lion's share of my life, and never once have I ridden a boat on the canal.
Oh, you should.
Yeah, I know.
You really should. It's fun.
We used to go down to Widewaters a lot when I was a kid. My dad would take us down because for years they've had the snack bar restaurant down there.
Yep. There's a new one again.
We would go down and usually get something, you know, get some hot dogs or whatever, and then go over to the picnic tables, and we'd watch all the people that would come down with their private boats and launch them at the marina.
Yep. There's not a lot of that going on anymore, but also the cave tour is really interesting, where you go through the old raceway for Holly Manufacturing, and that's a really interesting tour too. So you got to come back and do all the touristy things, and then
I do get back from time to time. My mom actually still lives in Lockport. She's in assisted living there, so we do get a chance to come up from time to time, but certainly not as often as I would. And of course, with the COVID situation, it's definitely precluded a lot of visits that otherwise we'd be able to make, you know?
Also, there's a shuttle now that goes from Niagara Falls to Lockport. And then when you get there, there's a second loop that goes around Lockport. It's all free. So you can ride all the way from Lockport to Niagara Falls. And then at Niagara Falls, you can pick one up that goes to Lewiston, goes out to Fort Niagara, goes all around to Lewiston, and then comes back again. So the tourism is, we're really making strides and getting people here and from one end of the county to the other. I think it's very promising.
And one of the buildings that is part of the History Center, right at the end of the canal, name the building.
Yeah, it's the Erie Canal Discovery Center.
There
it
you
used
go.
To be the Hamilton House.
Used to be the Hamilton House. And that was going to be my question to Ken when he was a kid. Did you ever hear of the Hamilton House?
No, that's one that's not on my radar for some reason.
That was a skating rink that my brother ran, and I was part of that when I was a teenager, right up till I went into the service. And we used to pack them in at the Hamilton House. I said, if anybody lived in the 50s and the 60s, you skated at the Hamilton House.
Yeah. Oh, it was across from First Presbyterian Church. It's on the other side of the street.
Okay, we have about 4 minutes left, yeah. Melissa.
Yeah, I went to St. Patrick's Church.
Yeah, so you were right
of course,
on the same street.
No, and actually when I went, they still had the big building next door, the nuns' convent.
Yeah, and then Saint.
I can't remember what the name of that. They had a name for that building.
Well, there was the academy there, the women. Mary's.
That's right.
Saint Mary's Academy.
And of course, that building's long gone now too.
Yep. Well, we have about 3.5 minutes left in the show. Ken, your closing thoughts and your thoughts about Lockport and the radio station here at WLVL.
Well, I just want to say that I do appreciate you guys including me on your show today. It's been a treat to come on and talk with you about Lockport. I've got, you know, great memories growing up there. It is a bit heartbreaking at times, though, when I think of back in the 50s and 60s, my earliest memories of Lockport, how the downtown area was, that it was just jam-packed with commerce, you know, all kinds of buildings and businesses. And sadly, like most, you know, little towns around the country, a lot of that is pretty much gone. But certainly the heart of the city is still there with the folks that live there. And it is great to have the memories and be able to reminisce about some of the great times that I had. And again, I can just say that as a kid, it was a wonderful place to grow up. I enjoyed, you know, going to school in Lockport. I enjoyed all the different places we got to go and visit. And it just is a, you know, my memories of Lockport are always, very first and foremost in my mind. And it's always enjoyable to think back to all the great time I spent there. And, of course, getting my radio career started at WUSJ, I'll always be grateful for them, because certainly the success that I had, you know, started right there in my hometown, to launch my career and get me started in the radio business.
And Ken, it's our pleasure to have you on today, and we have 2 minutes left, so it's a pleasure. I'm going to turn it back to Melissa so she can recap what's happening at the History Center. It's a real pleasure, Ken. Have a safe afternoon, buddy.
You do the same, and my best to both of you. Please stay safe, mask up, and for anybody out there that hasn't gotten vaccinated, please do so, because I lost a cousin from COVID, and I don't want to hear about anybody else having that same sad experience. So please take care of yourself. Please stay safe.
Okay. Thank you, Ken.
Okay, Melissa, we have a minute and a half. Okay. Let's see how fast you can fly.
We have a children's program on August 18th for 7 to 12-year-olds. It's a Titanic-themed program. We've done it several times. The kids really enjoy it. And that is from 10 until 1, it's $20 for the program. We do provide a snack, and there are coupons if you live in the town for $5 off. Also, we have the Cemetery Tales Tour at the Cold Spring Cemetery. That's on August 22nd at 1 o'clock. It goes from 1 until 3. We have 5 different actors who are going to portray residents of the cemetery, and you can get tickets for that by calling 434-7433 or sending a message to info@niagaracounty.org. Also, we have our Oktoberfest, and it's October 16th. We have the Frankfurters.
Niagara County's hometown radio station, 1340 AM and 105.3
FM. Wrong button, folks.
That's okay.
Okay, we have 15 seconds. Norm Palmer saying good morning for Melissa Dunlap from the Niagara County History Center. You're listening to 1340 AM, 105.3 FM.